Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Bielo, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. When we spend most of our days with our colleagues, coworkers, and computers, it's easy to understand how our personal relationships can take a back seat. We don't intend for it to happen, but over time, we can grow apart from the people we love most because we've not made it a priority to focus on them in a loving, intentional way. And what if we're single? In that case, we want to attract the ideal partner while being true to who we are. My conversation today is with Sarah Anma, relationship mentor and founder of Art of Relationship, which provides a proven step-by-step system for optimum relationships. She helps frustrated singles figure out what they want and how to get it. She also helps loving and committed couples to create and grow the love life beyond their wildest dreams. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast. I am super excited to have you here talking about relationships.
Thanks, Beth. It's great to be here.
Well, the first thing I want to know about is how did you get started with, you know, let me back up. There are lots of different kinds of coaching that one can do. And I'm curious about how you decided upon and got started with relationship coaching.
Well, I think it chose me. And first, I was really frustrated in my love life. And then I did some work and I figured out, okay, this is how I get a good guy. And then I got the good guy. I'm giving you the quick and dirty version. I got the good guy, but we didn't know how to show up for each other as good partners. So even though we loved each other and we were really committed, our relationship fell apart. And so I had to start over from scratch and really learn from all kinds of different disciplines how to be a good partner and how to have a really loving relationship. The guy ended up coming back, and he's now my husband. And when we got back together, we said, okay, what happened, and how do we make sure that it doesn't happen again? And really came up with a strategy that later people were asking me, how do you do it?
Yeah.
We see what you're doing, and, you know, we want some of that. And so I realized I was getting so many requests that people, I finally realized, okay, I need to do this full time.
Yeah, you end up with people saying, I'll have what she's having, and
exactly.
And what's your secret? And I love that, what you said very towards the beginning of your comment about we didn't know how to show up for each other. Mm-hmm. There's something that I really appreciate about that, and the way that you framed that, that it reminds us that in a relationship we really are needing to think about how we're showing up for each other. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've got a great success story there. Great example for your clients.
Yeah, we're really, really lucky. And we work really hard. It's not really hard. We have systems in place that make it really easy. And, you know, a lot of it is just, okay, here's where the rubber meets the road. Let's apply the tools and get through it.
Well, it sounds like you, at some point, were one of those frustrated singles, perhaps, looking for a relationship and not finding what you were looking for. First, my question is, since we've got a lot of introverts listening, what is the introvert single to do?
Well, first of all, it's not perhaps. I definitely was a frustrated single person. And, you know, there are couples the world over where one is an extrovert, one's an introvert. Both are introverts, both are extroverts. So it doesn't, being in a fulfilling relationship does not mean it's not reserved to a certain type of person, as much as our minds might tell us differently. What an introvert can do is do what's comfortable to them. Like, they don't have to go out there in a big way and say, you know, here I am, I'm single, and I wouldn't recommend that really for anybody anyway, because it's not necessarily authentic. You're just kind of gathering the masses that way, or not really being discerning, or what I would say, though, is it's really important to be yourself no matter what. And one of the things that I work with single people on is getting really crystal clear about not only what they want, but what they need. And then we look at, okay, how do we get that? How do we make that possible? Because we're trained very poorly, and we settle for what we think is available, which is really selling ourselves very short. That's like lowest common denominator type of thing. So what instead we want to do is make sure that we expand our imagination to what is quote-unquote available, and then we begin drawing near us somebody who is more in tune with our specific needs and wants.
And I appreciate you emphasizing that be yourself no matter what. It seems like the dating scene, when I was out and single, we didn't have the online internet portals and things like that, where it seems like there's probably a little bit more dramatic license taken with how people present themselves. And to really show up authentically at all times seems like it might, you know, who knows, it might take a little bit longer, but it seems like the results are going to be much more aligned and in tune with who you are.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I really like how one of my teachers, Alison Armstrong, talks about, you know, if you are high maintenance, tell them on the first date. You don't need to twist yourself into a pretzel in order to get somebody, because then you're lying. Mm-hmm. And then you get them, and you're both angry because it was founded on, foundation of sand. But if you say at the beginning, you know, I'm an introvert, or I'm a mess, or I'm, you know, X, Y, and Z, then, you know, people can say, okay, I'm not interested, or okay, let's see where it goes.
That transparency from the very beginning sounds very important.
It is, and we're not trained to do that. We're trained to, like, put on masks, and what do they, you know, scan, what do they like? What do I think they might like? And, you know, second guess ourselves, guessing what they want, and that just doesn't work.
So I mentioned a minute or two ago about how much the dating scene has changed in the past few years. And what are some ways that a single introvert, to expand that to anyone who might be less inclined to be going out and doing the bar scene or the party scene or the big groups, how can that kind of person navigate the dating scene and not get overwhelmed by it all?
Well, first of all, I'm very sad that it's so common to think of bars and parties, like drinking, you know, boozing parties, mm-hmm. as a place to find somebody.
Yes.
It's really common, and it's really scary, because if one is intoxicated or on their way to being intoxicated, all filters are skewed, all red flags can be diminished or poo-pooed, and, you might not even be yourself. So what I recommend to people is to pick one thing, especially if they're feeling shy or uncertain, is to pick one thing that you really like and pursue that. So if somebody loves horse riding, that they get involved in a stable or volunteer at a stable or a horse rescue or join a meetup group with horses, you know, with horse enthusiasts, or go on rides with a group once a month or once a week or whatever it is. To really, so that there's nothing more beautiful or attractive than a woman or man who is doing something they love. So if they're doing what they love, and maybe they're contributing, like in a volunteer type situation, which is also feeding the soul, that's going to make them really attractive to somebody else who loves that same thing and loves to serve in that same way.
And it seems like, back to that authenticity piece, when we're doing something we love, we're really, we're not thinking about, oh, how do I look and how's my hair and do my shoes match my handbag? we're absorbed and we're really showing our passion. And it seems like that would really make us magnetic to the person that would be drawn to us.
Very, very.
So turning for a moment to couples, because I'm intrigued by what you said before when we were talking about, you said you started to say it's been hard work, and then you said, no, wait a minute, it's not. We have systems. And you have a system that you use that helps identify disempowering habits that all couples probably develop over time. Mm-hmm. What are some of examples of some of those habits that you've seen in your coaching?
Well, my husband always jokes that we're really lucky because he was born in India and I was born in the States, and so his native language is Tamil and it's different from English. And he says, you know, we're lucky because we know we speak different languages. Now, there's different gender languages, you know, depending on which gender you are most associated with, your speech can fall into generalizations of one or the other. And not just that, but cultural, and cultural can be, you know, my block versus a block away, or, you know, my city compared to another city. So community, culture, family, you know, two different families living next door to each other speak very differently, especially about stuff that's tough. So what I do with couples when they come in, and I work with couples who really love each other, and they just want to have an incredible relationship and want to get better and better. But we still start with a forgiveness strategy, because the way that I express I'm sorry or I need to ask you to forgive me is very different from the way that my husband needs to hear it. So I need to, you know, he and I have had to sit down and get really crystal clear, so that I can hand him basically a roadmap for when he messes up. He can go to his roadmap and say, oh, she likes it when I use these words and when I do this body language and when I wait this long after she's been hurt by me, mm-hmm. and, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I also have a roadmap for him. It takes a little deciphering, and it takes a while to get there. And actually, Vijay and I have recently re-upped ours and fine-tuned it and kind of threw some stuff away and then brought some new stuff in. So that's one. Another one is very similar to that, is how I express love and how he receives love is very different. So we all know that we're different learners. Some people auditory, some people tactile, visual, any mix of those. And so I was expressing my love in a way that was overexerting and wasn't being received. So I was sending out this transmission, but his radio was on static because he wasn't tuned into that station that I was sending. So we need to get really crystal clear. For example, I was sick. I stayed up late and I packed a suitcase for him before. He was also sick, but he was sicker. So I packed the suitcase because he was feeling poorly, and that was a huge expression of love from me. It didn't register because that's not how I received it. Now, if I just sit down and I touch his feet or give him a foot rub, wow, that is like, you know, 100%. He really hears that and really feels that as an expression of love. So that's a lot less exertion than packing a suitcase when I'm feeling poorly.
So I hear that there's something of a, there's a negotiation a little bit about what, like you said, how we express and how we receive forgiveness and love, and an understanding that comes through this kind of dialogue that I'm guessing a lot of couples don't have.
We don't think to look for this kind of thing. The way it registers for most of us is he's not hearing me, she's not hearing me. Mm-hmm. God, we're in this again.
I also think about that, you don't appreciate me.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge one. And, you know, lack of appreciation breeds resentment.
Yes.
But, you know, I think of it more, less of a negotiation, more of translation. Mm. Here is the key to my heart. And it's a code. Or, you know, like a decoder, really, is what it is. And then the third one I was thinking of was that we are not trained to approach conflict as a team. We are trained to approach conflict as adversaries. And that's instinctual, and it's base, and it's fear-driven. But what we can do, because love is higher than instinct. It's a higher energy than the biology, if we tap into it. And so if we are committed to tackling a problem even if it's in the relationship, as a team, you would be amazed at what miracles occur.
I'd love to offer a metaphor to test out with you, because this resonates with me and some advice a fellow coach gave me about good coaching. She said, when you're coaching and you're in that dialogue, when it's you would have one of two feelings. It might be that you're playing singles tennis, and you're lobbing the ball back and forth. You know, I say something, she says something. I say something, she says something. She said, when it's really going well, you feel like you're playing doubles and you're on the same side of the court. And when you were just speaking of that, about having that team approach, that image just popped into my head. And I've experienced that. And it really is a dramatic shift in the energy about, you know, like you feel like you're, we're in this together. We have a common purpose here. Very different. Yeah.
Very different, like you said. And it doesn't demand that we discount our feelings. It actually allows us to really go into them as much as necessary, rather than trying to put the brakes on them or exacerbate them or any of the other really disempowering struggles that we do with our feelings.
So when you think about, you know, is there any one thing that you see most commonly that that couples do that leads to that's avoidable, like an avoidable mistake that you see a lot of couples making? Is there one that you can identify and share with us? And if so, what are maybe a few things that one can look at to start to turn that around?
Well, it's funny, because I would normally say something else, but I got a very loud voice that said, say this. And that is making ourselves small and discounting what we have to offer, and in order to make the other person okay. So what that means is, like, pussyfooting or contorting ourselves in order to get a certain result from our partner. That is huge. And it's very common that one or both of the parties will try to minimize their greatness, their needs, their passion, their ambition, in order to keep what they perceive a status quo, or maybe to protect the other person unnecessarily from a lot of energy. It's really interesting, especially I see it a lot with, like, self-deprecation.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, I would think, if you feel like your partner is having any sort of esteem issues of their own, there might be a tendency like, well, I want to hold back a little bit from who I am, or the any, you know, if I'm feeling confident or joyful or something really good just happened to me. It seems like we need to be able to celebrate those things, as opposed to kind of locking them away or just sharing them with a best friend. And what you're saying reminds me of something I realized very early in my relationship with my husband, was I had this habit, especially on weekends, of saying, so what do you want to do today?
Right.
You know, and I realized one day, you know, I asked that question, and I think that I'm being loving and, you know, connecting with him, yet I'm asking, I haven't thought about what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm totally disregarding how I might be feeling. And I'm sort of I'm putting the burden on him to figure that out. And when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not even taking into consideration what I want and need, really shifted the way I related to him on that particular topic of just, you know, how are we going to spend our time? It became much more cooperative, as opposed to me just looking to him to say, well, here's what I want to do, and then me responding and reacting to that.
And even, you know, that question can be said with 1,000 different motives.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down to, who are we being? You know, am I being secure? And am I being giving, or am I being a martyr? Or, you know, am I being manipulative, wanting him to think that I'm really selfless, but really I want a specific result? Or again, you know, am I offering it up so that he can have his dreams come true, and that in turn is going to make me really happy? Which we can do that from time to time too.
Yeah. So it sounds like being intentional with your question or with your statements. And again, that to me, that kind of goes back to what you said in the beginning about how you're showing up for each other. Mm-hmm. And what's the intention behind what you're offering and what you're receiving. So what about you? You had mentioned this before that, you know, all different types of personalities are attracted to each other. And one of the things that's come up a few times on my Facebook page is a question about, you know, introverts and extroverts in relationship. Mm-hmm. And how can particularly the introvert honor their needs, you know, take care of themselves while also being receptive, responsive, and in relationship with someone who might have very different needs from them?
Mm-hmm. Well, it boils down to personal responsibility. And that means getting clear on what your needs are and then being able to express them with love. And, you know, meeting each other where there's intersection, but also, you know, giving a little, receiving a little. So if an introvert is willing to go to a work party for their extroverted partner but won't really want to stay as long as their partner, they can say, sure, I'd love to go with you. And I want to stay an hour, so I'll take the car and you take a taxi home. Or if you'd like to leave with me, that would be fine too. You know, and we put these outrageous expectations on each other, on everybody. You know, you need to act a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way that, and you should be able to read my mind so that you know it.
Exactly.
You know, we get into a lot of pickles with that usually end in divorce or heartache. So it's really, let's be personally responsible, yes, and take care of ourselves. You know, the main thing that I tell everybody is, in order to have what you would like in life, in order to have a love beyond your wildest dreams, you must first take care of yourself and allow the overflow to just cascade over your beloved or your potential beloved or your family or your friends. You must take care of yourself, and that demands personal responsibility, which is not popular.
Yeah, and personal responsibility and awareness, like you were saying, like know what you need. And to me, that responsibility comes in with asking for it and being clear about how you ask for it and what you need. Like you said, that's so, so key, because otherwise the first thing that comes to mind is there ends up being a lot of martyr syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of discontentment and resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more normal than than the expressing one's needs compassionately and clearly and then seeing them met. Unfortunately. That's
yeah.
Why we have the high divorce rate.
Yeah. What is it now? Is it still like 50%?
It depends on where you look. It's mm-hmm. anywhere from 45. Some places say 41, some places say 45, some places say 50.
So it keeps you busy. That's what I'm guessing.
Well, you know, we're in such an interesting time and place right now. My grandparents, anyway, they were, you know, World War II. My parents were born during World War II. So their 50s Ozzy and Harriet lifestyle did not work for my hippie parents, Aquarian children parents. So they threw out what their parents did, but they didn't have anything to replace it. So most of the kids that I knew in elementary, junior high, and high school were from divorced families. I mean, literally, I think there were 2 or 3 parents out of all those kids that I knew in elementary, junior high, and high school whose parents were still together. So our generation has said, okay, hold the farm or hold the phone. We're not going down that route. But again, we don't have something to replace what our parents did. So we need to get trained.
And I just recently read a statistic that said if you are friends, if you're married and you have friends who have gotten divorced, it increases your odds of getting divorced by like 75%. It was huge. I don't think that means, you know, you have a 75% chance of divorcing, but that whatever the odds were before have now been increased by 75%. And I do know that, from my own personal experience, that when people close to you announce that they're getting divorced, it is a little disorienting. It is a little disconcerting and causes you to look inward a little bit and say, okay, so are we doing everything we can to take care of our relationship? Because all of a sudden it feels a little vulnerable when you see other people who appeared to be steady, stable, happy, get divorced.
Yeah. It sends a shockwave of grief, of disbelief, and then self-doubt.
So one of the bottom lines that I'm taking away from you is that so much about this has to do with transparency and communication and talking to each other.
Yeah, and it's got to be done compassionately, which, again, we're not trained to do. We can say anything. We can say the hardest thing ever. But if we say it with a big, open heart, full of vulnerability, the impact can be received rather than defended again.
Do you have an example off the top of your head of what a difference between what one might typically, you know, how someone might typically say something and then how, if it were shifted to be from that compassionate heart place, how it would sound differently?
I got lots of
I bet.
You can go from blame, you never support me, to I'm not feeling supported. I would love to talk to you or brainstorm with you on ways that I could get some of my needs met that aren't currently getting met.
Big difference.
Big difference. And you felt the shift in energy, too.
Absolutely.
Because I went there. I went to blame, and then I went to the big, juicy, open heart. Because you could say those words. If I said, I blame you, but I was still feeling really juicy, loving, it's going to be kind of like a wet noodle. Like, oh, okay. But, you know, if I say, you know, if I reverse it and I say these loving words but from a blaming place, that is absolutely palatable.
Well, thanks for sharing that example, giving us something to think about. So I know from our conversations that you and your husband kind of fall in that ambivert category.
One, yes,
both worlds. Yeah.
We both are, I was really amazed because when I spoke with you, when I heard you speak, I resonated so much with the introvert. And I thought, oh my gosh, it kind of rocked my foundation because I had thought all along that I was 100% extrovert, and I kind of prided myself on that. But anyway, so my husband and I both really love people, and we get a lot of energy from people. And we love being out in a crowd, and you know, we love to go up to people who look like they're having a hard time at a party or a function, and just chat them up, and we can also each talk to one or two people for the whole time. Now, my husband went to this incredible 9-week program a couple years ago, and he was on 14, 16, 18 hours a day, living in kind of a dorm-type atmosphere, creating, thinking, developing, all these brainy things, really filling his tanks. But he was surrounded by people all the time. And when he came home, he didn't want to see any of us.
He's like, I'm going into my cave.
Oh. Yeah, he needed a lot of cave time. And I was like, oh, I invited so-and-so for dinner. And he was like, ah. Oh. And I didn't think of it. I was thinking, you know, oh, he's going to be missing these friends that we adore. And yeah, he did. But he just needed some... a considerable amount of downtime that I would not have needed. So there are things like I like quiet when I'm trying to focus on something, which I think is often attributed to introverted characteristics. And so I think it's been great for both of us because, you know, my husband told me at one point that he has some shyness, which I was like, what are you talking about? You are one of the most outgoing people I know. Then I realized, oh, okay, he makes an effort.
Yes, great
which
distinction.
Made me love him. Yeah, yeah, and that made me love him all the more.
Oh, so, wonderful.
I know, he's the best. So, I can appreciate that. I think he may be a little bit more on the introverted side of the scale than I am, but... it's been really nice to be able to kind of play on both teams and to see when, okay, I need to shut down sometimes and I want to unplug the phone and just, you know, have a jammy day and watch lots of movies and stay home and not talk to anybody. So it's good for us to recognize it in one another so we can give each other the space for it and also appreciate each other when we're making an effort to meet other people where they are, even if it's outside of our comfort zone.
So to wrap things up, I have a couple of questions that I ask every guest. And the first one is, and you can decide, you know, if maybe you're in that introvert mode for this one, that if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island and you only had 3 books that you could take with you, and remember it's only a year, some people kind of panic a little bit and say, wait a minute, 3, I can't do it. But just for a year, what would you take with you and why?
Well, I would take the newly published Mark Twain autobiography, Volume 1, because he asked for it to be published 100 years after his death, so it just came out. And I went to buy it the other day, and it's voluminous. So you could use it as a weapon or to knock down coconuts off the tree if it's a tropical island, because it is huge and
wow.
Heavy. So definitely take that. I love Mark Twain. I could read him forever. And I would take a dictionary because I am I have at least 7 dictionaries myself. And then I would ask my mom for the 3rd one because my mom is a bibliophile and she's just gotten me into this really fun series. Genuine page turner, historical fiction mystery that's really fun, which is super fun and escapist, but I also have to read it with the dictionary, and I'm expanding my vocabulary at the same time. So I'd probably get something like that from her. I would give it to her because she knows my taste on that 3rd one.
Is there any particular edition of the dictionary that's your favorite?
On my shelf, I have one from 1939 that I really like. It doesn't have television in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another one at Webster's from 59 that is a little bit more current. But I think if I was on the desert island, I would probably want my Oxford or something equivalent encyclopedic, because then I would be getting words and facts and people.
Yeah.
So I'd be learning history and important things that I may have missed.
Excellent. You'll come back you'll be ready for an episode of Jeopardy or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when you come off that island.
Yeah.
So if people want to learn more about you and your products and services, how can they go about that?
Well, the best way, if I resonate with people, is to get you know, take advantage of my free assessment and my free, I have a free session for everybody who is interested in learning more about me. And you can sign up for that at my website, artofrelationship.net, and that's singular, artofrelationship.net. Or you can write to me directly or my team, and we can schedule an appointment for you at info@artofrelationship.net. I'm happy to provide your listeners with that as well. I just love it because I get to meet so many people, and they're so varied, and also we suffer in a lot of the same ways, so it's nice to be able to give people a little bit of hope if they're feeling a little down. It's always an upgrade.
And I think what you've shared with us today, I hope is encouraging for anyone listening that great relationships require attention and work and nurturing to grow. They just don't they just don't happen.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, so it's go ahead. Sorry.
Well, one of the things that is so important, and I am constantly reminding myself and reminding my clients about, is that Rome wasn't built in a day. We haven't been trained properly. We've been trained to fail, really. And so we do this step by step. And, you know, little by little, when we look back, wow, things have changed a lot. But in the process, it can feel a little daunting, but it doesn't have to be.
Well, thank you for being our guide in making it a little less daunting. Well, thanks for being here, Sarah, and I appreciate your time, and I appreciate especially your sharing of your wisdom and experience with our listeners. So thanks so much.
Beth, thanks for the opportunity. It was really a delight to be with you today.
This is Beth Below, the Introvert Entrepreneur. I hope you enjoyed this podcast interview with Sarah Anma. You can learn more about Sarah and sign up to get your free CD, How to Attract and Grow the Love of Your Life, along with weekly tips and tools at www.artofrelationship.net. To be notified of future podcasts from The Introvert Entrepreneur, you can subscribe to the RSS feed or visit iTunes. To find me, just type the word introvert into the search bar in the audio podcast section of iTunes. If you enjoy these podcasts, I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and share these interviews with friends, family, and colleagues. You can also find out more about my coaching services, workshops, and speaking engagements at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And be sure to join us for more community and conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.